I'm John Kroll. Coming up on No Limits, we will talk about the art scene in Indianapolis and central Indiana. We'll talk about what's vibrant and what's not. We'll talk about the ways that Hoosiers support the arts and the ways they don't. And we'll talk about what connects artists and their audiences. We will discuss all of this with our guests, Shannon Linker of the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Christopher West of the Mass Avenue Gallery, and Amanda Maurer Taflinger of the Indiana Handicraft Exchange. And, of course, you. You can join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending us a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Please do join us. First, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about the art scene in central Indiana. We're fortunate to have as our guests Shannon Linker of the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here. Christopher West, who owns a gallery on Massachusetts Avenue. Christopher West presents. Christopher, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
Good to have you here. And Amanda Maurer Taflinger of the Indiana Handicraft Exchange. Welcome to the program, Amanda.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. And I should say that the Indiana is a distinctive spelling. It's I-N-D-I-E-A-N-A, Indiana Handicraft Exchange. I also would like to invite our listeners to join the program by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I want to start a little bit by talking about just how healthy is the art scene here in Indianapolis to give us sort of a baseline at which we can talk about more specific matters. And I think I'll start with Shannon. Shannon, how healthy do you think the art scene is?
Well, I think a lot of people would be amazed to know how many artists we have working here in Indianapolis and the greater Indianapolis area, how many galleries, how many museums. People just don't understand the depth and breadth of the arts here. And as the arts community is struggling with the economy, as every aspect of our culture is, we're hanging in there, and we're finding ways, creative ways, because it's a creative community, finding ways to make things work and to reach a new audience and to be successful. And I think everyone's working hard, and it's working.
Well, and I think probably Amanda and Christopher, I'm going to go to Christopher next, but you have more sort of hands-on because you're actually dealing with artists and consumers of the arts as well, right? To some degree, you are too, Shannon. And how vibrant is it from your perspective, Christopher? How long has your gallery been open, first?
I opened the gallery not quite 2 years ago, over a year and a half ago. I was curator of the Museum of Contemporary Art for 5 years prior to that. And the art market here is pretty tough right now. Mm-hmm. You can tell, as Shannon alluded to, the economy has certainly hit the arts pretty hard. But I can say that the quality of work being made here has continued to get better and better by the local artists since I moved back to Indianapolis about 7 years ago.
And Amanda, how healthy do you think the art scene is here?
I grew up in Indianapolis, and I left when I was about 18. I was determined to find some place where I thought that the art scene was better. So I moved around for about 10 years before I moved back, and I moved back because I started speaking with people here and asking them, and they all had really positive things to say. And I don't know if I found that it was much improved when I came back because I had been too young to really experience it. But, you know, in the 10 years that I was gone, when I came back, I found a marked improvement. And I think that it's really flourishing now, and there's quite a lot to do here in the art scene.
Let me pick up on that point a little bit. In what ways did you find that there was marked improvement in the scene? What were the signs for you?
There were a lot of bigger events that appealed to a younger generation of artists, a number of different types of events, There weren't a lot of not just fine arts fairs and fine arts events, but there were different types of events that appealed to different audiences in the arts community.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit about a point that Shannon made right at the top, where it said that people would be surprised at how many artists there were working here in Central Indiana and the quality of the art. What accounts for that disconnect? Why aren't people as aware? Even in Amanda's narrative about her departure from the city, she said she didn't think there was a lot going on, and qualified it a little bit by saying, maybe I was too young to realize all of this, which suggests also that there's a breakdown in the communication in some fashion. Shannon, what do you think accounts for that?
Well, I think there is a breakdown in communication to some extent, and that's something that the Arts Council is charged with, and all the arts organizations are dealing with, trying to get out the message, not only locally, but regionally and nationally, that there's a lot going on here. And it's obvious when you look in the newspaper or you look on our indiearts.org website for the calendar of events, and there's often so many things to do on a given weekend that you can't do them all. So you wish they would almost spread out a little bit. Let's do something during the week because there's too many things to do. So I think people are surprised by that. And I think that even local people, because there is something, and I'm not a native Hoosier. I came in a little bit later. I've been here about 10 years. And there's something about, we're not a boastful people. That's not natural to Hoosiers, talking about how great we are and how fabulous our art scene is. And so people just kind of assume we're a quiet nap town, if you will, and that's kind of what they've heard and that's what they believe it. But when they come here, it's almost even better because the surprise, the amazement of, wow, you have a museum just for Native American art here in the Midwest. And wow, you have over 600 visual artists just on this database alone, and there are probably 1,000 others that aren't on there. It's, if you really look at what we have, it is amazing, and people are shocked to know that.
Well, and I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about, Christopher, your story, the fact you opened your gallery 2 years ago.
Correct.
What prompted you to decide to open a gallery in the middle of, you know, perhaps the most significant economic downturn in our lifetimes? I'm assuming it was something other than a desire just to make money, because there are easier ways to make money.
Certainly, yeah. And I guess I figured if I can make it now, I could probably make it any time. So, but in regards to getting the word out there and reading a larger population, I think it's more of a cumulative effort by a lot of the major players in town. I'm thinking specifically about the cultural trail happening in Indy and the great dialogue happening with the Fred Wilson sculpture. Also the IMA, and they were just curators of the American Pavilion at the Venice Biennale. It seemed for so long, I grew up here as well, you didn't hear much about the arts. You heard a lot about sports, amateur sports capital. Now we're starting to get into the limelight for other reasons beyond that. So it takes time and a concentrated effort by a number of players, and we've got, thankfully, some pretty major things happening right now.
Well, and Amanda, I guess I would ask somewhat the same thing. What drove you toward making the arts sort of your career or your life?
Well, like I said, I moved around for about 10 years after I graduated from high school, and I came back here in 2007. And I had been a part of a craft community in Chicago, and when I moved back to Indianapolis, I noticed that the art scene was kind of growing and a lot of things were happening here, but I felt like that was an area that had been kind of left out. Nobody had really started a movement in that type of area here, and so my husband encouraged me to start our own independent craft fair here, and we did that, and then we followed later with a store, which is called Homespun, and it's on the east side in Irvington. But one of the things that I noticed here is that in Indianapolis, if you have enough gumption, you can pretty much make what you want to happen, and you will receive a lot of support for it because we don't have everything that a lot of larger cities have. So people are excited to see new events and new undertakings happen, and you receive a lot of support and a lot of push from the community to really make it successful. People are excited about new things.
Well, and I want to thank you. You've actually provided the perfect segue for our first listener question from Alex Johnson, who says it's important for any arts community to be successful is the ability for artists to earn money doing their craft. Homespun is great for that, but what other outlets apart from grants are there for artists to earn a living in Indianapolis? What about gaining exposure outside of Indianapolis? Shannon, I think we'll throw that one back to you first and then take it around the horn. What are the outlets, basically?
Okay.
What ways can artists make money here?
Well, we do have a gallery system, and that system is it does change a lot. There are recently we have had some important galleries close down because of the economy, and we've had others pop up. It is a very fluid system. That system exists. I think it's probably more important than the galleries we have or we don't have to talk about the idea of is it something that the community understands the value in purchasing art? If your own community doesn't understand the value and actually purchases the art from the galleries, these artists are going to go away. They're going to move. And that's something that the Arts Council tried to take on a couple of years ago when we created the Be Independent movement, Be Independent, Buy Indie Art. The idea was, it's great that a lot of people are going out to First Friday and going to galleries and having a sip of wine and walking around and looking at the art and talking to artists, but what we have to do now is actually buy the art. And artists that can make it here are, with the help of Christopher West and the Arts Council and a lot of other different organizations, are trying to make connections regionally and going out, you know, beyond and that to the national level. And because of the internet, it's doable. It's relatively easy to do that.
Well, let me ask real quickly of Christopher then, because you operate and own a gallery. Can you walk me through the process of how you decide what you're going to display, what you're going to sell in the gallery, how you identify the artists with whom you want to work, and then try to connect them with something resembling a market?
What I exhibit is a mixture of some local artists, some regional, national artists, and a couple of international artists. And then the way I pick what I want to show is what I'm most passionate about. It's how I have the most fun, and I think what I'm probably the best at selling, what I really, really believe in. Conceptually, there's no one kind of thread that runs through my program, but it's photography, painting, installation, video, the full gamut.
So how does say I am an artist, and I'm sure there are going to be some listening to this program right now, and I want to get your attention. How do I go about doing that?
First of all, I would recommend visiting the gallery on multiple occasions, going to the openings, looking at different shows, and then thinking about your own work within that context and see if it fits. If you're painting pretty pastures, it's probably not what I'm looking for to show in my gallery. So it's good to get out there and to look at everything and see where your work might fit.
Could you talk a little bit about what you do show in your gallery and what you like?
It is highly conceptual oftentimes. It's not that pretty picture typically that you hang above the sofa. But these are artists that I am working on getting greater exposure, not only locally, but nationally and internationally.
And when you say not that pretty picture, I mean, what is it that you're looking for? What's the connecting element or whatever for you?
Well, it does have to be aesthetically pleasing to me, but it's also got to be conceptually sound. So the artist is making work with a purpose. There's a history to it. And they can bring all that together and then make the physical object that is pleasing to me, but also is steeped with those ideologies.
We are talking about the art scene in Indianapolis and central Indiana with our guests, Shannon Linker, the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Christopher West, who owns a gallery on Massachusetts Avenue, and Amanda Maurer Taflinger. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about the art scene in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Our guests are Shannon Linker, the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Christopher West, who owns a gallery on Massachusetts Avenue, and Amanda Maurer-Tafflinger, who is up with the Indiana Handicraft Exchange. I'm sorry, I work my way past that hyphen every time. We would like to invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can do so by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. And speaking of that, we have gotten a tweet that seems to be pertinent to one of the points we were making earlier. Ask the question, do you think the cultural district's designation helped improve the local art scene? And if so, should we add more? Amanda, do you think they helped? And if so, I'm going to reframe the question ever so slightly and use the host prerogative here. If so, why did they improve the art scene?
Well, I just moved back in 2007, so I wasn't here when that program began, but I do think coming back to the city, it was one of the things that I noticed, and it made me wonder what's in that district, why is it named a cultural district? And I think that it's a big draw for tourists as well when they come to the city and they want to explore. That may be something that people that are driven toward the arts look for and want to find out about. And I think that there should be more. I do think that so.
Christopher West, do you think they helped?
I think it leads to a kind of broader sense of community and what's happening more widely across the city and people taking pride in their neighborhoods and having that sense of identity. So it seems to be kind of the shift where we were all just inside one giant interstate to now we're recognizing these different areas of town where some great things are happening.
And Shannon Linker, do you think they helped?
I think they absolutely helped. And I'll just piggyback on what Amanda said about the visitors coming into town. I know when I go to another city, I want to know, where is the cultural and arts district? Where is the theater district? Where is the museum district? It's one of the first things that I find out. So it's important to note, though, that it's not only visitors from outside. It's visitors from right here in Indianapolis that need to know we have a theater district and we have a museum district and we have these things, because they're the ones day in, day out that support those institutions and those districts that keep them alive and keep them vibrant and going.
Well, do we, I'm going to pick up on the second part of the question then. Do we need more of them? And if so, I'll keep it with you, Shannon, on that. If so, how difficult is it, a process is it, to create more of them?
Well, I kind of think they organically grow on their own. And the city can be instrumental, the Arts Council, different organizations in town can come together to make that an easier process for a location, a neighborhood that has a lot of growth and wants to make that happen. I think that we could oversaturate the city with too many districts, that's possible. But I don't think that's happening now. And as long as they organically happen and we're celebrating that and bringing attention to it, then it's all good.
So it sounds like, from what you're saying, and I think I picked up on this theme with all three of you here, that the cultural designation or has to come from some sense of history or purpose. It's not like you can sit in a room like this one and say, oh, by the way, we're going to have this district and we're going to put it here. That won't work at all. Christopher, you're nodding your head and you made eye contact at the wrong moment, so I'll throw that question back to you.
I totally agree with you. I think that the idea came up not too long ago that we need to start a Chinatown on the west side. You can't just start a Chinatown. It's got to be there and evolve naturally. So I think, you know, there are some interesting things happening in different parts of the city that have yet to be designated cultural districts. But I think that there's certainly room for more. Like Shannon said, too, you don't want to oversaturate, but
yeah,
but
it's like I know down in New Orleans, there's, if you're walking in the Garden District down there, it's sort of a famous landmark that you'll walk and there's a little plaque that, because they're so steeped in history down there, where it says, on this date in 1875, absolutely nothing of significance happened, to sort of mock those kinds of pretensions. We've talked about how it can be valuable to bring people here and make them aware of the city's specific culture. What is it about the art scene in Indianapolis that is distinctive, that might be specific to Indianapolis, that sort of identifies us? Everyone now, I shouldn't have made the comment about making eye contact, because it's like teaching a class. Everyone's looking at their shoes right now and trying to avoid taking this one first. I think, Amanda, I haven't picked on you for a little while, so I'll throw it to you first.
Well, I mentioned earlier how if you have enough gumption here, if you have enough drive and motivation, you can make just about anything happen. And I think Indianapolis is small enough that the communities are very tight-knit, and I think that in some ways that's the charm of our art scene, is that a lot of people do know one another. There is a lack of pretension, I think, for the most part, and people are all here to support one another. Everybody that I know has been really vocal about supporting us and our endeavors, and we've in return exchanged that favor and done as much as we can in promoting other people's ventures. So I think that definitely, that willingness to support every avenue of it is something that we have that maybe a larger city doesn't have, because not everyone is kind of as interwoven as we are here.
Christopher West, what's distinctive about Indianapolis, or something that is specific?
As Amanda said, it is a tight community, and it's relatively easy to get to know all the players pretty quickly. So in that sense, it's nice. You can kind of figure things out at that level in a short amount of time. But Indianapolis also, as opposed to some of the bigger cities, it allows you to get out and to look at other things and other places too. Whereas, you know, it can be very affordable here, and it allows you to go see the world and see what's happening in the art scene in New York and Chicago and London, because you're not necessarily tied down because of the huge cost of living expenses of some other cities.
Or cost of operating a business and all of that. And that's one of the, I'm going to reframe the question a little bit. Shannon, you're welcome to take a shot at the original premise, but I think in reshaping it ever so slightly, we tend to make the argument, at least politicians do when they're crafting proposals, that the arts are a tool along with tax policy and all of that to draw business to the community. Suppose for the moment I'm the mayor of Indianapolis and I want to try, I know that's a frightening thought for a lot of people, but I am the mayor of Indianapolis and I want to try to bring a Fortune 500 company here, and I want to communicate what is special and distinctive about the arts community here. What do I tell them?
Well, that happens quite a bit. When companies move to Indianapolis, they do seek out information about what's available here, because quite honestly, people that are moving in from other countries, from much larger cities, won't spend much time here if we don't have a world-class symphony, theaters, museums, and we have that. It may not be well known that we have all of those things, but we do, and we can take them there and show them the collection at the IMA and the Eitelsjorg and the theater spaces that we have and the symphony and the gallery scene and the artists that we have. So that's something that does happen quite a bit. The mayor does use the arts to tout the success that a business could have in this community. It happens a lot.
We've gotten an email question from Eugene Hugenboom. I hope I did not massacre the pronunciation of that last name. Whose question is simply, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest, how supportive of the arts scene do you think the current city administration has been? Christopher West, I'll take that one back to you.
Okay.
Okay.
3.
3, right in the middle?
Right in the middle. We did see cuts in arts funding under the current administration, which was unfortunate. There was some really great public art programs happening a few years ago, and those have been whittled away, which I think was bringing a lot of attention from all over to what was going on in the city. And even, they were national and often international artists that were showing here, but it kind of trickled down to the whole scene, and it was good to have those international eyes looking at Indianapolis.
You say a three, and you've mentioned the cuts. What are the things that perhaps the administration's been doing right? I'm assuming if it's in the middle and you're not giving in it entirely, that there's got to be another side to the question.
Maybe I'll change my vote to a two. there's certainly more that could be done. I mean, you look at some of the money that a city like Carmel is spending on the arts, and it would be great to see kind of that model happen here. I'd probably do it a different way, but to see some of that focus, that attention is happening just a little bit to our north, it'd be nice to see more of that here.
Amanda Maurer, Taflinger, how supportive do you think the administration has been?
I don't know that I can speak to that much. I moved back, you know, like I said, in 2007, so I haven't been around for, you know, too long prior to that to know kind of the progression of things. My opinion is just that it has not been extremely supportive, and I'm kind of on the same page as Christopher. I would say a two or three. You know, I always feel like there can be more, and I don't see a lot of what they are doing as extremely visible right now. I don't know about a lot of it, so to me it doesn't seem like there is a huge amount of support there.
Shannon Linker, this is probably the most charged question for you. So
it is. This is a tough right. one. But I would say, do I have to give a number?
well, the caller asked.
Okay,
asked for
I would say
listener, yes.
4.2.
Okay. You've got a gift for precision here.
There are absolutely things that could still be done. We could go beyond where we are, but I have to say that when this administration came into office, the arts community was worried. There were rumors of everything's being cut and the arts are not a priority, but when our leadership at our organization met with the mayor and his team, we learned that that's not the case, that even when many people on the city council wanted to cut arts funding completely, the mayor himself said, no, we can't do that. We can't be that city that does that. So the mayor himself has stood up for the arts many times, and I know that if things were better, they would be doing more. I know that our hands are tied, all of us, right now with the economy. And it's our job to keep working on the administration and on the city council to make sure they understand the value, and so they will put the dollars behind it to make sure that we're not that city, that we are a city where everyone has equal opportunity to experience the arts and good quality arts as well.
Well, and you know, this debate seems to take place more often at the national level, but there is an ongoing debate in this country about the role of government funding in regard to the arts. I think, you know, we seem to run on a 2 or 3 year cycle. Some member of Congress gets upset about something the NEA has funded, and we have a long discussion about exactly how many tax dollars should go into this. What is the proper role for government in terms of funding the arts, do you think, Shannon? And then I'll come back to Christopher and Amanda as well on this one.
Well, of course, there are many debates out there about that role, and our position is that, and what we fund through the Parks Department, through the monies that we do receive from the city, is outreach to underserved communities, to children that would not be able to go see an opera or the theater or a symphony or a museum show. These are things that are, in my view, a God-given right. Everyone should have access to the arts. It's too important. It's too important to our humanity to just say people with money can go do these things. So, unfortunately, that's where we are. And the government, the city government, does play a role in that, making sure accessibility is key in the community.
Well, and we've gotten a tweet that sort of tangentially deals with this question. It's from a listener named Ben who says, are the guests afraid of pushing too hard with the arts they show or make? And I'm trying to read the only, is indie still artistically conservative? To some degree, the way I'm bringing that question into this context is the argument you hear on the other side from the access is, as a taxpayer, I should not be obligated to fund expression that I do not approve of or that offends me or whatever. To some degree, what Christopher was saying earlier in the program is you look for art to some degree that provokes some sort of response, and there is occasionally a risk that some of that can be offensive to some people. In that context, do you have to temper what you choose to show or what you choose to try to sell? I guess that's another fancy way of saying how does the businessman and the art lover reconcile those two roles?
I try not to separate them. If I think something is worthy of being shown, regardless of how hard it is to sell, I'll show it. And I'll say, too, that every time that I've pushed it and thought that something might not be accepted by this community, whether it was too racy or too controversial, it's the most risky shows that seem to be embraced the most wholeheartedly by the community, that they're looking for something, something more out there than just you might typically expect to find. In terms of government funding, I think of it in a broader sense of where do we like to go visit? And we go to Rome, we go to the Great Wall of China. You know, these are things that wouldn't have happened without government support of these amazing architectural symbols, these arts communities that they helped create. So I think it could take a much broader role.
Amanda, what is the proper role for government, you think, in terms of funding and supporting the arts?
I agree with what Christopher said. Also, I have a perspective as a former art educator. I taught for 3 years. I finished my degree in Chicago before I came back here, and I was an art teacher, and I was laid off.
At what level?
At the elementary level.
Okay.
But, you know, I feel like a very good place to start is keeping arts funding in education so that, as Shannon was talking about, giving underprivileged children access to certain things, there's a lot of that can be done through the schools. But a lot of the schools are losing funding for arts. So I think that having government support for education, for arts in the education, is a good place to begin.
Well, and is that, I don't want to entirely leave this area, but you make a good point, Amanda, that part of the continuum is broken here, too. And to some degree, I mean, do we think we do a good job of preparing people to understand arts in their more mature years? In our education system, at least my own recollection is that art was presented sort of as the eat your vegetables portion of the school day rather than something that was supposed to be fun and exhilarating. Christopher West, your perspective on how well we handle arts education here in the state.
Growing up here, I discovered the arts on my own, kind of when I was in college or taking a break from college. And I often wonder what would have changed or how my life would have been different if I would have been exposed to more early on. I think I missed part of that. So I think there definitely should be more of an emphasis on that in the educational system.
We are talking about the art scene here in Central Indiana and Indianapolis with our guest, Shannon Linker of the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Christopher West, who owns a gallery on Massachusetts Avenue, and Amanda Maurer Tafflinger, and I'm going to try to get this right this time, of the Indiana Handicraft Exchange. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking about the art scene in Indianapolis and Central Indiana with our guests, Shannon Linker, the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Christopher West, owns a gallery, Christopher West Presents, on Massachusetts Avenue, and Amanda Maurer Tafflinger of the Indiana Handicraft Exchange. There, near the end of the program, I actually got it right. Invite our listeners to join the program by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. want to talk real quickly, and I'm going to throw this back to Shannon Linker real quickly. We're talking about sort of government support and how the relationship between government and the arts. We talked about how those conversations between government officials who want to bring businesses here. Is there much of a budget out there right now for promoting the arts in Indianapolis as a reason for people to relocate here? And if so, what size is it?
Well, that's a good question. Those things kind of have an ebb and flow. And with the economy, it's as it is right now, that's very difficult to come by. So the budgets for those kinds of things are tight right now. I think when the economy starts getting better and big corporations start moving around and start hiring people, then you'll see that coming, that flowing it more. But if big corporations aren't hiring people in from China or from England or something, then there's not as much need for it. So,
well, it's interesting. I know from my previous career as a newspaper journalist, doing a story based once in Batesville, home of the famous casket company, where they have all of these disproportionate arts activities there, including the local school system has an artist in residence, or at least did back in those days, funded primarily by the casket company, because they found that was about the only way that they could get top flight talent to come and live in a small, relatively isolated place like Batesville. I'm not demeaning Batesville in the process here, but that was part of the thinking, that it was an investment in the community and all of that. What companies here do you think do the best job in that regard, Shannon?
Well, there are many that support the different organizations. The symphony has a long list of corporations that support them, the IRT and the museums. And we bring most of those people together at our annual Start With Art luncheon, where we have business owners and arts community come together for a big celebratory luncheon. And so there are lots of them. I would say many of our programs and our support comes from the Lilly Endowment, which, of course, is made possible from the Lilly Company being there and existing here in the city. There are many, many others. Chase is here and is very supportive, and many of the banks are. It's hard to pick out the ones.
And we don't need an exhaustive list. I wanted to get some idea of who the artistic super supporters here are. We've gotten an email question from Joyce Ribble, who speaks sort of to this theme of why it's difficult to get funding and support. Could your guests discuss how the visual arts go beyond the important but narrow economic benefit to artists and gallery and store owners to actually serve the people of the community? People can be told about the arts, but unless they see a direct benefit to their own lives, the perception of "it's not for me" continues. How does the work of each of your guests reach out to and impact the lives of all kinds of people in the community? Amanda Maurer Taflinger, I'm going to throw that one to you first. Make a case for why the arts are important to a community.
Well, the art that we focus on is craft. A lot of the artists that we feature at our store and a lot of the artists that you see featured at the Indiana Handicraft Exchange are people who make functional art. So, and a lot of it's lower price point than a lot of the stuff that you might find in Christopher's Gallery. We have people that make, screen printed hand towels, T-shirts, wooden utensils, beautiful wooden cutting boards with amazing designs inlaid. Functional pottery, clothing for babies, head adornments, all sorts of fantastic things that people can use. So at a lower price point, they may be able to pick up something that they can actually go home and put to use rather than, not that there's not a value to hanging something on your wall, but doing something more with it where they carry it with them every single day so that they're constantly looking at it.
And that seems like a natural segue there. Christopher, make a case for hanging something on your wall. Then. It's a natural transition.
To that question about the kind of trickle down to the rest of the community, I just think about where I would want to be and where I want to live and who do I want sitting next to me on the bus or at the restaurant? Do you know? Do I want an interesting community of people that are creating things and kind of adding to a broader dialogue, or do I kind of want that sameness in my community? And I prefer a really diverse, interesting community where I'm constantly being challenged by some of the people in it.
Shannon.
I would agree with Christopher that when you think about cities that people travel to, people want to live, people aspire to live and visit and make their homes, they're all cities that have very strong arts communities and do exciting, interesting things. And they support and encourage and nurture artists. And artists don't think about necessarily the here and now and everything. They're always looking ahead. What they think is normal and interesting now, the rest of us probably will come along years later, but nonetheless, that's why they're so important to have around. And this is design as well, architecture in the city and design of different objects that we have, not just art. It's everything. And that making a city that people want to come to and live and stay is just important for all of us. We all need those business owners to be here. We all need the sports teams. We all need each other, and the arts are a huge part of that.
Well, let me take the liberty of sort of reframing Joyce Ribble's question here, because I think we're sort of doing what she wanted us not to do, which is to talk about, you know, it in the way, in economic terms. How does art and having, you know, artists supported here in the community affect your lives? What does it do aside from, you know, help Christopher sell a few paintings? There are other ways you could be making a living, I presume. What is it about art that spoke to you and said, this is how I want to spend my life?
It's what's being created now. I think it's the thinkers of our day that are doing things and pushing the boundaries, and it I find it immensely exciting, regardless of whether I have the gallery or not. It's I can't imagine just my life without it, and me being pushed like that, and seeing the exciting newness of what's happening right now.
Well, and Amanda, you said at the top of the program that you moved away here in part from here because of what you thought was not a particularly vibrant art scene. Why was that so important to you at a relatively young age?
I wanted something fresh and exciting, and I wanted to be in a place that I felt was creatively driven, where the atmosphere was just vibrant and flowing with creativity all the time, and I didn't think that I could find that here, and I was definitely mistaken. I don't know if it developed and changed when I was gone, but as I've come back, I've seen that we definitely have that here now if we didn't before.
And Shannon, real quickly, your personal biography here, what is it about the arts that spoke to you so powerfully? Why did you decide you wanted to do this?
Well, I think that I was a philosophy major in undergrad, and I took my first art appreciation class and saw the power of what a human being can do to create something that has no function. There's no real purpose for it other than us to express ourselves and to communicate. And that was just amazing to me. I thought, that is something that I want to learn more about. And so I switched my major to art history. And I just think that it really is one of the things that tells of our humanity. It's one of the things that if without that, we cease to be as human as we could be. And personally, that's why it's important to me.
Keith, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. I understand you've got a question about budget access.
Well, it's the guys talking about budgeting, and that's really the basic restrictions to art access. But my question or comment supposedly would be, you know, what can you do that's free? There's got to be policy changes that we can affect that would be either free or relatively cheap, you know, such as Amanda mentioned art in the schools. What if the Arts Council could sponsor volunteers to go out and teach and provide more access? What if the city just offered spaces for free for arts events? you know, what if the arts were supported or promoted as much as the Super Bowl, the Indy 500? I mean, those kind of policy changes that would be free is what I'm interested in asking about.
Good question. We will get to it. Thank you for the call.
Sure thing.
Well, it's what is there? We'll start with a jumping off point for Keith. What's out there that's free right now? And we've gotten another email from Catherine Young, who wants to talk about underserved people and people who don't have the means necessarily to access art. You know, what is out there that is either free or, you know, available at a nominal expense? Shannon?
Well, there are a lot of things that are free. There are, Indy Parks has free concerts all around the city for the communities, for the neighborhoods that they're in. As I said before, the funding that the Arts Council grants to the arts organizations, that is for outreach. So that is for reaching out for a free concert or a class to come in and see a dress rehearsal or free admission to a museum, something like that. So that money is being used for that purpose. It may not be as big and as exciting and as noteworthy as it could be, as we would all love it to be, but that is happening, and people are thinking about ways to access free events. The Arts Garden downtown, over 300 performances every year, and they're all free, and anyone can go in and enjoy that. Exhibitions as well, the gallery system, anyone can go into a gallery and see artwork. All of the arts organizations that receive funding from us in Marin County offer free admission, offer discounts, offer everything. I mean, we're trying very hard to make sure everyone feels welcome and everyone has access to the arts.
Well, let me reframe that a little bit, because Catherine Young's is really also about lower middle class families, that we focus on the inner city folks rather than, you know, understanding that there's a gap there in the middle that may not be served as well. And I'm gonna sort of reframe this question by saying, Amanda, let's assume we could invent a time machine here and you could speak to the person you were before you left Indianapolis. How would you say, okay, on a very limited budget here, you want to get involved in the art scene, you want to bring more art into your life? How would you do that now? What would you give? What advice would you give
I would say, open your mind to the possibilities of different kinds of art. There's art in a lot of different avenues, things that you might not imagine. Some people make a distinction between, you know, fine art and craft. There are a lot of people making handmade goods out there that are part of the art scene on a different level than you might see in some of the galleries. First Fridays are a great thing that I didn't know about. I don't know when it started here in Indianapolis, but when I left here, I don't know that it existed. And now that's a huge part of the art scene here in Indianapolis. I think that provides a lot of visibility and a lot of recognition for a lot of young and up-and-coming artists at all the different venues around the city. Check out different stores, different galleries, explore different parts of the city.
Christopher West, how, if you are on very limited means here in this city, what's the best way to bring some art into your life?
There's so many options. I mean, I would start at the IMA and, you know, visit that for free. But as Amanda said too, it's all around you. You can look around at a store like Homespun or Forum Plus Function or Midland Antique Mall, and it's everywhere and it's accessible. It seems that sometimes, and thinking of when I was growing up here too, I didn't always take advantage of that. And so it's just making sure that you get out and about and take advantage of what we have.
What is the best kept secret in regard to the art scene here in Indianapolis, the thing that more people ought to pay much more attention to than they do? Shannon Linker.
Well, I would say we do have several small arts organizations that are doing incredible things on very tiny budgets. You have Primary Colors, you have Big Car. There's a lot of those that are bringing in artists from out of town. They're doing unique, creative things to get young people involved. And a lot of people kind of that know about the IMA and know about the IRT don't know about these young, hip, energizing organizations, and they owe it to themselves to find out about them.
Other than Homespun, Amanda, we'll let you plug it a little bit, but what do you think is the best-kept secret about the arts here?
I would agree with Shannon. I think organizations like Big Car specifically are doing a lot. They have just opened a new facility on the west side of town, which I think is an area that largely does not have a huge arts community, and they have opened this new facility there, and they've just won a big grant for that. And they will have tons of fantastic programming over the coming years. And then on the east side, we are trying to encourage more arts on the east side with Homespun. We're really working diligently to establish a workshop space over there to offer arts classes and small business development for the east side of town where there isn't a lot of opportunity for that kind of stuff at a very low cost.
Christopher West, in about 15 seconds, best kept secret.
Just that the creativity is happening here, and there's artists doing amazing things, and if they're not finding the proper venue, then they make one up and they just go ahead and do it. And that's some really exciting things have happened.
I'd like to thank you all for joining me today. This has been a lively conversation. I've enjoyed it. I'd like to thank my guests, Shannon Linker, the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Christopher West, owns a gallery, Christopher West Presents on Massachusetts Avenue, and Amanda Maurer Taflinger of the Indiana Handicraft Exchange. We're going to talk next week about the challenges confronting the news business with veteran reporters and editors from around the state. Please join us next week. I'm John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Matthew Sosi. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.